Welcome to our presentation this afternoon, titled Overview of the Soil Health Partnership and Midwest Row Crop Collaboration. Our speaker this afternoon is Nick Acer with the Soil Health Partnership. Nick, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Luther, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And I have to apologize, I'm battling a little bit of a cold, so I hope my voice will hold up for this talk. It sounds like the mic is pretty good, so hopefully everyone should be able to hear me throughout the discussion. From the perspective of this talk, I will be talking about the Soil Health Partnership and our recent agreement and collaboration with the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, but most of it will be from my own perspective or our own perspective from within the Soil Health Partnership. I'm not a representative of the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, but I will be speaking about our collaboration there as well. Starting out, I'll spend a fair amount of time talking about the Soil Health Partnership, and then later on, I'll bring up the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative as it's enhancing what we're doing with the Soil Health Partnership. I'll go into a few of their objectives and their mission, where their scope of their geographic influence will be as well as the specific projects they're working on. And so I'll try to tie it together at the end part of the discussion. The Soil Health Partnership is a little bit more background on the partnership itself. It stemmed from discussions going back all the way to 2011. And between 2011 and 2014, partners were put in place. A lot of the agreements, a lot of the concepts for the Soil Health Partnership were put in place for the launch that occurred in early 2014. And that's when I came on board. I came on board to serve as director for the Soil Health Partnership and really kick it off, launch the partnership. From the National Corn Growers perspective, the Soil Health Partnership was a means to generate the data and communicate about the benefits of soil health more broadly, and to understand the links between soil health, conservation technology practice implementation on a farm level, but then also the impacts on crop productivity, economic profitability or economic risk management, and then also environmental risk management. What do all those things mean, and what are the practical means forward? And what are the site-specific recommendations we might be able to provide to farmers? Because we realize on a state-by-state basis, we have pretty good recommendations for cover crops or for no-till or strip-till, those conservation technologies, in addition to nutrient management. But when we boil it down and start looking on a county basis or even a field basis, or even more specifically at a subfield basis, the recommendations that we have at the state level don't always hold up. And so we need to generate additional data to really understand those very site-specific interactions and make those recommendations at the level that the farmers are actually practicing on, and then also that agronomists are making recommendations upon as well. And so that's what we were trying to get out of the Soil Health Partnership from the National Corn Growers perspective. And so we've enrolled some farmers in the program, and I usually like to start out just providing their perspectives. Again, looking at the farmers, what are the farmers learning about, and what are they thinking about when it comes to soil health? And these are just two examples from our network right now, and I'll provide some more examples from a broader spread and an understanding of how far our network is cast right now. But from just two farmers in the network, on top you can see Chase Brown, and he's a farmer in Decatur, Illinois. And what he's looking at and trying to learn from the partnership and the data collection efforts are really about the nitrogen management. They want to make sure that he wants to make sure he has the right amount of nitrogen in the soil, that it's not too much, not deficient, and he doesn't want to lose that nitrogen at the same time. He wants to make sure that he's getting a good yield bump. So not always maximal yields, but optimal yields and a bump in productivity. He's very much interested in that at the same time as improving organic matter and other components of the soil. And he wants to see it on his land. We see that more and more often, that the results have to be directly attributable to that land. And that's a lot of our recommendations are recommendations for on-farm research. So even the university research or the other research networks we have out there, they're a great starting point, but our farmers want to see it on their own land. Similarly, on the bottom, we have Mark Mueller from Waverly, Iowa, one of our farmers in Iowa who's enrolled, and he's learning a lot about soil health. He says he's gained a great knowledge on nutrient availability, understanding the nutrient use efficiency curves, how the nitrogen availability lines up with his crop uptake curves and each individual crop, looking at carryover, residuals, things like that. He's interested in learning more about the soil microbiome. What does the microbiological community in the soil look like? What are the forms and functions of those different microbial communities look like? So he's interested in that, as well as also improving organic matter and then reducing nutrients leaving the farm. He understands in Iowa the pressure being put on farmers to reduce any losses of nutrients, whether to the atmosphere or through groundwater at the same time. And so he wants to make sure that he's practicing the best way he can. So when we're putting together the structure of the program, we're actually working programmatically with our farmers throughout the geography of the Soil Health Partnership. I generally try to think in an end and across the agronomic cycle. What does this mean for farmers? What does this mean for agronomists? What does this mean more holistically across our agricultural community? And so as we're making these decisions, we're trying to understand how soil health can be injected and be part of those decisions. So we can start in the lower left-hand corner, looking at the decision tools that are currently available for farmers. This could be farm management software, it could be apps on your phone, your tablet, whatever these decision enablement tools might be. And you could think in the off-season months, the winter months, we're putting together the best plans in agriculture that we might implement as we go into the spring, into the planting season. And these are decisions made on hybrid selection, variety selection, weed management programs, nutrient management programs, pathogen management. All these plans are put in place, and you have a general structure to what you might implement in that upcoming growing season. And then the growing season hits. You go into the growing season, prepare for your planting, whether it's nutrient application in the spring, whether it's tillage, whatever those components are going into the spring, you move into that spring. And Mother Nature hits. Those best laid plans are up to what Mother Nature throws at you, or your machinery breaks down, so you have some issues there. Or maybe your hired hand decides he or she found another better job, and you have labor issues. So all these different components, they interact and they affect how those best laid plans might actually be implemented in that season. So we have to think about adaptive management. And in that adaptive management, we want to make sure that those decisions made kind of on the fly throughout the year are the best possible decisions that farmer and that agronomist could make together. And we recognize that that's at least 40, if not more than 40 decisions throughout the year. Almost every single day, marketing decisions are occurring, or decisions are related to the weather are occurring. And we want to look and understand how different soil health components can feed into that. What does that mean if you have a cover crop to improve your aggregate stability? What is that cover crop going to mean for your weed management program? What is it going to mean for potentially an alternate host for an insect that might be in that field at the same time? Or maybe later on with pathogen management, is that cover crop going to be an alternate host species for a pathogen that might be harbored in that field at the same time? So as we're building, improving soil health, we need to think about these agronomic decisions at the same time. And that's what we're trying to consider and gather additional information upon within the Soil Health Partnership. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's looking at our yields, again, the optimal yields, not necessarily maximizing yield in every situation, but maintain that optimal yield for economic profitability. And within the current markets today, I would say economic viability, keeping our farmers in farming, helping to maintain year-over-year production and make sure they can remain in production and keep those businesses in place. And then ultimately, again, at the end of the day, reduce the environmental risk. Those environmental risk mitigation efforts are paramount to keeping everybody in production at the same time. So it's looking across the cycle, and we're really trying to figure out what are those data collection pieces that we can put in place to address the questions our farmers and agronomists have at all at the same time. So the goals of the Soil Health Partnership are fourfold. We started out with the main goal of recruiting a network of farms across the upper Midwest. This was a managed growth. There was a plan for managed growth in developing this network of 100 farms, enrolling 20 farms per year over a five-year period of time. And since then, and this will be something I bring up a little bit later in relation to the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, we've extended that period of time, so now it's over a 10-year period of time. So this program is a longer-term period, or a longer-term program in which we'll collect data year over year on private farms in relation to the soil health indicators and how they interact with yield data, with economic data, with environmental data year over year, again, for that 10-year period of time. And we want to make sure that we're collecting the data in a scientifically credible way. So we're working to establish research protocols and data analytics methodologies so that we can not only collect the data, but ensure that the data that are collected are credible and that we can analyze those and publish those to update our recommendations to our farmers, but then also engage with the scientific community and help everybody understand what the translational research is telling us and provide feedback loops from the farm level back to the research level at the universities at the ARS, at private within private industry, and all the other research institutions that might be acting at more of a basic level and not so much at the applied or translational level that we're acting. So you can see the list of the Science Advisory Committee in the upper right-hand corner. A pretty robust list of folks that have come together, and I'm very fortunate to be able to work with them to pick their brains and get input on the protocols we're putting in place throughout the Midwest. And then lower in the slide here, you can see our steering committee. And you can see the steering committee comprised of the National Corn Growers Association, as I've mentioned, but then also support from industry, from Monsanto, and then the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative that I'll talk a little bit later on about, and the multidimensional support they provide, and then also the technical advice from the Nature Conservancy and Environment and the Environmental Defense Fund. And what's unique is looking across these organizations, they are relatively diverse, and they bring different perspectives. They bring different ideas on how to approach problems to the table. And so as we're putting together these plans and working with our farmers, working with our agronomists on how to improve agricultural sustainability, we're not doing it in a unilateral fashion. We're working across, trying to incorporate many diverse perspectives, trying to think outside the box. What are the different perspectives we can take, or what are the different paths we might take to provide the most practical solution to our farmers, to our agronomists, or others that might be influential in the space? Similarly, we're drawing financial support from some diverse folks as well, the Walton Family Foundation, but then also in exemplifying cross-commodity support, the United Soybean Board, and then the USDA NRCS has provided us now 2 conservation innovation grants to the program to bring in the federal level of support to the program and make sure that we can continue this forward. And we wouldn't be able to do this without not only the funding, but then also the support staff. So the funding that we've brought in place, the conservation innovation grants, especially the very first one, that one came forward in 2014. We were lucky enough to get awarded that first grant, and that allowed us to expand our plans to bring on field management staff. Initially, the plans were to have an admin assistant and myself for the first 2-3 years of the program, and then bring on field managers after that point. And we realized now that we needed much more support in the field, working directly with farmers to provide technical and communications assistance all along the way. And so with that first Conservation Innovation Grant and then additional support from the Walton Family Foundation, from the United Soybean Board, year over year, as we continued with the program, we were able to expand that field support to bring on now a total of 4 field managers with now 2 open positions, one in Nebraska and one in Illinois. So we're looking to even expand the team beyond where we're at today. But these 4 field managers that are in place, we absolutely wouldn't be able to do what we're doing today without them. And keeping all of our farmers up to speed on the many decisions that impact the data collection quality and consistency in the program, and then also that technical assistance as we're thinking about adaptively managing and bringing in new conservation technologies into these systems. It's trying to understand it and provide that assistance and provide guidance as to what the potential burdens might be or the potential hurdles we have to work around might be in implementing those conservation practices. Whether it is a cover crop that overwinters and in trying to think about how to terminate that cover crop with heavy rain events in the spring, or if we're thinking about transitioning from conventional tillage to even either a strip till or a no-till situation, what does that mean for adjustments on your planter, your coulter settings, things like that need detailed understanding on a very soil-specific, site-specific level. We're trying to provide that guidance to our farmers and at least connect them with the right resources so that we can manage effectively. Outside of the field management staff, we've also been able to bring on communication staff. And we realized that within this program, we kicked it off and we had initial plans to have support from across all the collaborating partners in the program for the communication staff. And what we realized is that everyone had a full-time job. And then with that full-time job, it was hard to get people to donate time and energy to a program like this. And so we needed additional funding and we needed additional support for somebody who could wake up in the morning thinking about soil health communications, thinking about soil health partnership communications, but then also helping to spread the word from collaborating organizations in a consistent way. So we brought on Jenna Higgins-Rose, and we have been just tremendously impressed with her work in generating interest and awareness, publicity about what the Soil Health Partnership is doing. And this is within the agricultural community, but then it's also outside of the agricultural community. We're seeing stories being picking up the Soil Health Partnership in diverse news outlets, whether it's the Washington Post, we've had mentions in the New York Times, and in other outlets like that. And I don't think we would have been able to do that had it not been for Jenna really managing those communications in a consistent way. And then recently we've brought on a program coordinator, Ann Dietz, and she's been instrumental in helping us to administer grants and just keep the wheels spinning as we're drawing additional support and funding for the program, additional collaborations, just keeping everything moving as we're all traveling around and doing our managing our other responsibilities. So it's this team that's really in place, and we're continuing to expand, and we're hoping that we can find additional people to take the field management roles and the operations manager to round out this team and really provide the best support we can to, again, not only our farmers, but the agronomists that work directly with our farmers and others in the agribusiness industry. I mentioned the network, the growing network, the managing of that growth over time. So year over year, within the first year, 2014, we had about 20 farms enrolled in the program. In 2015, we added an additional 20 farmers to the program to round it out at about 40. And then within 2016, we've actually brought it up well ahead of schedule to about 70 locations across 9 upper Midwestern states. 65 of these locations are on-farm trials, working directly with farmers on their private operations to conduct research on a 20 to 80 acre field. In addition to those 65 locations, we're also working with 4 community colleges that have working lands in place. And with those community colleges, we saw that as an opportunity to engage and work and help develop curriculum for their students that are going through the technical and community college systems, students that oftentimes are returning right back to the farm or working right directly in that local area in the ag retail space. And then also we formed a collaboration with North Dakota State University and their share farm to bring the research protocols from the Soil Health Partnership to that site as well. And so we'll continue to expand this network. Next year, we hope to have the full network of 100 sites enrolled in the program, and we're doing pretty well. We have a number of farmers that have stepped up to bat already, and we're receiving more and more interest almost every day within the program. Farmers reaching out to us, asking us how to be part of this program. And so we're trying to evaluate, do we stop at 100? How do we provide services or resources to farmers even beyond the network of 100 sites, recognizing that the interest is going well beyond what we would have expected at just a network of 100. So how do we provide that? Are we the ones to even provide that? Are there other people in the agricultural space that can provide that more effectively than us? Those are some of the questions we're asking ourselves right now. But the planned growth, at least for next year in 2017, would be to bring the network up to 100. It's probably within the similar geography in the upper Midwest, maybe expanding to further into the Dakotas, but still the heart within Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. Those sites are going to be the heart of the network into the foreseeable future. So another way to look at our network, I mentioned the sites, these are those same sites, but I wanted to give a perspective on the scope of influence these sites are having. Because the farmers, they're collecting the data, they're researching, but then they're also working to spread and communicate messages about what they're learning on their farms. What are the practical means forward? What are the things that are working? What are the things that aren't working in terms of adopting these new conservation practices and, again, those interactions within their agronomic systems? And so what we've done within each one of those sites or around each one of those sites, we just drew a 25-mile buffer to indicate how far maybe a farmer would drive for a field day. So within that 25-mile buffer, oftentimes farmers aren't going to know every single farmer within a 25-mile area buffer like this, but oftentimes that's going to be the scope of influence for bringing people into field days and having those local communications. So within that, even at the network of 70 locations in the Midwest, we're certainly seeing pretty good coverage across Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. But there's plenty of opportunity to take this even further, and that's why we know we can't do this alone. There are other networks in place, whether it's the ARS networks, whether it's the individual grower networks like the Iowa Soybean Association or the Conservation Cropping System Initiative. There are a lot of different networks in place, and we're trying to link and collaborate with those networks to use consistent protocols, consistent data collection methods, so we can hopefully potentially pool the data to have greater statistical power to understand, again, these very site-specific interactions so we can all make better recommendations in the agricultural space. I mentioned the networks and collaborations. As we've continued to grow that network, Year over year, we've seen growth in the number of sites, and as we've expanded the number of states we're in, we're seeing the networks in those states, we're seeing greater interaction within those states. We're seeing incredible interest in what we're doing, and then also how we're linking with others. And this is really where we generate the strength in the program, recognizing again that we can't do this alone. We're only one piece in this puzzle, and it's by working across all these different organizations that we can come together and really gather that strength that we can provide to agronomists and farmers that are implementing the work. And then also communicate outside of agriculture to our consumers, and that's going to be an area in which the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative can help us out. And then also to policymakers and other influential figures, other key stakeholders in the soil health in the soil health area. So you can see this diverse group of organizations we're working with includes commodity groups, so corn growers associations on a state-by-state basis, includes federal organizations, universities, input providers, includes field to market, so sustainability organization. It's pretty diverse, and that again to me is very exciting to see all these diverse organizations coming together for the benefit of our farmers, of our agronomists making the right decisions to improve agricultural sustainability. And I know that with these collaborations, we can move forward together. Now, I focus it in. This is a little bit, it's probably incredibly hard to read. And so I'll provide descriptions more generally about what these data-centric collaborations have meant. And again, we're not trying to do it alone. We have our set of protocols that have been put together with utilizing that science advisory committee that has come together. But these collaborations are just to provide an indication that on the data collection side, we're working with many others as well. And again, that's to hopefully generate bigger data sets so that we can have a better understanding of what those, again, the site-specific interactions and understanding across all these different organizations, sharing information, sharing protocols so that we can get better information to our farmers in a quicker fashion, than we've ever experienced in the past. We know we need to ramp up these efforts. We need to move quicker than we ever have in the past. And this is, in my mind, one of the ways we can do that, by sharing the information, by working together and trying to move the concepts, move the ideas as quickly as possible. And at the same time, as we're moving, as we're collaborating, we can share candid feedback at the same time and understand where the holdups might be or what things might not work and how to move around that, how to adjust our data collection techniques or how to adjust our service offerings to farmers or whatever it might be across this network. So on the left-hand side, this is more that list is more in relation to data we're collecting in the protocol in our protocols for the partnership. And on the right-hand side, those are more organizations that have picked up the protocols or learned from our growing pains in growing this network and the lessons we've learned, trying to relay those lessons learned so that as the organizations specifically on the right-hand side of the screen, so that as they're building their networks or building their protocols out, they can learn from what we've learned and implement their programs more effectively. So on each individual farm in the Soil Health Partnership, we enroll a 20 to 80 acre field in that program, and we set up a replicated randomized strip trial design. So it's an RC, a randomized control block design with two treatments. It's very simplified. It's a farmer control compared to an adaptive management system. And in that adaptive management, so it's very much a systems comparison. And within that adaptive management system, we're trying generally one of three different types of experiment of treatments. The first one would be cover crops, so cover crop, no cover crop design. The second one would be a tillage comparison, so maybe a no-till versus a conventional till, or a conventional till compared to a strip till, and then replicating, randomizing that. The third set of treatment options would be surrounding nutrient management, looking at rate or timing trials, especially the rate and timing trials specifically are looking in more mature conservation systems with long-term histories of no-till or cover crops, to get a better try to generate some pilot data to understand or maybe generate some research hypotheses as to the changes in nutrient use efficiency or nutrient cycling within systems with a long-term history of no-till or cover crops. So those are very specific. The other two treatments, the cover crops and the tillage treatments, the farmers who are enrolling in the program are very much new to these concepts. We're trying to enroll very representative farmers throughout the Midwest and many of our farmers are very new to cover crops, very new to strip-till and no-till, and so we're trying to learn from their experiences in the current agronomic climate. What are the current market considerations? What are the current cash flow considerations? Rent versus owning considerations. And so we're working with farmers to better understand those transition periods to adoption of new conservation technologies. So the data we're collecting include pre-plant soil sampling, starting with routine analysis samples on a one-acre grid. And in addition to the routine analysis, we're collecting Cornell soil health assessment samples, and then the soil health nutrient tool, also known as the Haney test samples, on every single strip in the program. In addition to that, we're looking in the summer months, capturing aerial imagery to get a snapshot in time of how that crop is growing and progressing. All the soil samples are georeferenced. All the aerial imagery is georeferenced, and then we come back in the fall to collect georeferenced yield monitor data. And then we couple that with site-specific management practice and input allocation information on each individual field. So we're starting to collect the data that we hope will be able to help us link the soil characteristics with crop growth data, with the yield data, with the economic data, and then in a handful of sites we're collecting environmental information such as water quality information at the same time. So we're trying to put the pieces together the best we can. And again, we're not going to do this alone. We're collaborating with many others to help us in the data collection pursuits. Outside of the data collection, we're only 2.5, almost 3 years into this program, but we started to put together data analytics teams. We have some data amassed already, but we're starting to put together these analytics teams to start to get an early look at the data that we've collected, to put together the statistical techniques, the methodologies, and start to look at the variability we're experiencing in the data so that as more data comes into the program, we have a better idea of how to analyze the data the most efficiently and turn the data into usable recommendations to our farmers and then also publications in a very rapid manner. So the way in which we've done that, we've kind of broken it up to three bucket areas, the first one being soil productivity and agronomics data, and that's being headed up by Dr. Doug Carlin. And then there's an economics pool, and then kind of an integration, sustainability, and soil carbon team that has come together, and that's being led by Dr. Chuck Rice. And so the integration piece, we're separating this in these buckets initially to get a first look, but the important piece will be putting them all back together, because we know that none of these components function independently. They are very much intertwined, and we have to understand those interactions amongst the system's components to better understand how to make recommendations to our farmers. But this is a first start to it, and we're very early in the process, and we're learning as we're going. But we wanted to get something in place so as the data come in, we can start to analyze and generate summaries very quickly. Outside of that, we're holding a lot of communications events. Half of the program is data collection. I've spent some time talking about that. And the other half of the data, the program is really about communications, engaging with the farmers, engaging with the ag media and others to spread the word, the word on what's working, what's not working, and making sure that the messages that we're bringing forward are based in science, that the claims that we're bringing forward are based in peer-reviewed publications, that they're credible. They're not emotionally based, but they're based in science and they're credible. And so at each one of our field days or farmer engagement events, we talk about soil health concepts, and we bring in local resources to tailor that discussion to what's specifically available in that community. And so at each individual site, we have a field day or farmer engagement event every single year. So this year we've had over 40 events with the farmers that have enrolled in 2014 and 2015. And then next year we'll have 70 and maybe even more than 70 events spread across the 100 sites that we've had in the program. And we're seeing great interest. We're seeing thousands of people coming in general across these events. And we're also seeing agronomists and other ag chem dealers and others in the ag retail space become more and more interested in well as well. And we're talking about providing more and more training events. We've provided over 20 training events for agronomists and ag chem dealers already, and we expect that to grow. We're also reaching out at the national level, like the Tri-Societies meetings, engaging here, providing talks here, oral paper presentations, poster presentations. We have a booth upstairs, engaging and interacting with others to try to learn from what others have experienced in the past as well. Similarly, at Commodity Classic, that's an event that's mostly farmer-focused. farmer and ag retailer or agronomist focus, so interacting there as well. Ag Retailers Association, interacting there as well. So trying to inject ourselves into the national level conversations as well and try to learn from what others are learning at the same time. And we've seen some success. We've grown over the last 3 years, and these are some of the media metrics that we've had in the program even over the last year. We've seen Soil Health Partnership coverage in over 385 media stories in just the last year, so 2016 alone. And then also we see that the media stories that are covering the Soil Health Partnership, we see people engaging with those. And so this media metric, on the second bullet point, the 430-plus million media impressions, I was relatively new to that. I'm a scientist by training. I'm not a communications expert by any means. But my communications manager tells me that these numbers aren't too bad, that we're reaching maybe 500 million people probably less, but we're having almost half a billion media engagements. So those stories are going out. And I see this as a way to impact and hit and target a lot more people. We're having much more engagement here. We can have our field days, and those are incredibly important. Well, we're going to reach thousands of people with the field days. And this is a way to spread the information a lot further. Millions of earned media impressions as opposed to just thousands. So coupling these different tactics is incredibly important. We're also continually updating our website to include all of our protocols, all of the resources that we use, quick fact sheets for agronomists to advise on soil health as well. Those are all posted to the website. And we're going to be including data summaries. So coming up this fall and into the winter months, we'll start posting data summaries, initial summaries and findings that we're putting together across the program. So that'll be on our website, and that's soilhealthpartnership.org. And then we're also working to get feedback and engagement from the farmers. We're asking our farmers several times of the year. Actually, I'll jump to this slide. We have several events throughout the year in which we're pulling our farmers and agronomists together and trying to ask for their feedback on the program. So one of these events is a Soil Health Summit. This is kind of our keystone event. And we specifically dedicate half of that event to farmer feedback sessions. These are almost small breakout sessions in which we're asking our farmers and agronomists and close project collaborators about their perceptions of the program, how do they think it's going, and then also about the data collection and communications aspects of the program. Are we collecting all the data that they would like to see collected? Are we returning the data in a form that they can use on their farm immediately? Or what are things that they would wish for, hope for into the future? So we're getting good feedback that way, and we're also carrying that forward at our summer research meetings. We have a checkpoint in the summer, and usually in the July timeframe, to interact with those farmers and agronomists at the same time. And usually just about a month or two after soil sampling had finished up. And so it gives us a good opportunity to think about and ask them for feedback on the soil sampling process. Did you have the right protocols? Did you have the right training videos, infographics? Did you have the right soil sampling packet? How did this all come together? Was it effective in the way, were our communications effective for standardizing the protocols that would be implemented on each individual field? So it's a really good opportunity to get feedback from the most important people in the program, and those are our farmers and agronomists, to make sure that as we're moving forward with the program, that we're effective in every aspect of the program to the best of our ability. And we're also doing that with the data results. We're thinking about data flow process, economics, data comparisons, even data privacy and ownership policies, asking our farmers, is this okay with you? Piloting ideas. What do you think about analysis? Where do you want your data to go? And within the National Corn Growers, this is a very important question. It's also very important to ag industry and others that work and manage farmer data. So we're asking our farmers very directly, what do you think about analyzing your data this way or releasing your data for analytics to this organization? Piloting some of those questions to the farmers to get feedback on that analytics process at the same time. And so as we're thinking about this, as we're gathering that feedback, we're also thinking about expansion. And this is where the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative really comes in. So I'll provide a little bit of a summary on the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative. Again, I'll give the disclaimer that I'm not a representative to the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative. And so the perspectives that I'll provide here are from the perspective that we've formed a collaboration with the collaborative to extend the Soil Health Partnership, and they've become a main funder to the partnership at the same time. So I'll actually jump ahead a couple slides here. And the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, collaborative, it's been renamed a couple times. It's been around in one form or another for about a year and a half. But in its current form that was really just launched at Farm Progress in late August, it's called the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, and it's a collaborative of organizations that span kind of the ag supply chain along with environmental organizations. So food retailers and input providers that include, as you can see on the screen, Walmart, PepsiCo, Monsanto, Kellogg's, General Mills, and Cargill. And they're also working with some of the most respected conservation organizations like the Nature Conservancy, Environmental Defense Fund, and World Wildlife Fund. And so they're working together. Again, relatively diverse group coming together to help farmers out. And what they're looking at, they want to really support, enhance, and accelerate sustainable agricultural production. And so that means, from their perspective, improving water quality, optimizing irrigation efficiency, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And so they've put together some goals surrounding each one of these to really think and work with others in the ag space. And they recognize that it's very important to work with others in the ag space. They're not necessarily experts in working directly with farmers, but they want to work with farmers, so that's where they've come to the Soil Health Partnership, and recognizing the relationship we have with our farmers and agronomists, they want to enhance that relationship and carry that network forward. So that's where the funding coming from the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative is really directed. And their goals that they have are pretty ambitious goals, but at the same time, they're pretty targeted. So you can read these by 2025 and across all of them except for the third bullet point, that's by 2035. The first one is 75% of row crop acres in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska are engaged in sustainability measures. So this is focusing on the field print calculator within field to market. And then also reducing nutrient loading from Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska by 20% as a milestone with it to the agreed upon metrics with the Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force, goal of 45% reduction in nutrient loading. And then by 2035, across those three same states, 45% reduction nitrous loss, or percent nitrogen loss reduction goal, and the partnerships established to make sure that the collaborative is working across that upper Midwestern, upper Mississippi River Basin. And then also on the irrigation and the water use efficiency piece, that 50% of the irrigation units used in Nebraska will maximize water conservation to reduce pressure on the Ogallala Aquifer. So again, pretty ambitious goals, but they're also very specific. And the geography that they're acting upon is, I showed the map from the Soil Health Partnership earlier, and you can see that two of the three states that the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative is focusing upon is also kind of the same geography that the Soil Health Partnership is active in. And you might be able to ask, or might ask, why these three states? And the answers that they provided have been surrounding, within these three states, the majority of crop production occurs in the Midwest, with the states of Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska representing 44% of corn, soy, and wheat production in the United States. So incredibly high production areas, and they wanted to focus those production areas. And then also recognizing, as illustrated in this map, that these areas are targeted for nutrient reduction strategies as well, nutrient loss reduction strategies as well. And the modeling efforts have indicated that these are high nutrient loading areas for the Gulf of Mexico. But they're also realizing these high productivity areas are farmers are currently lacking information on site-specific recommendations. As I've been mentioning throughout this talk, they recognize that farmers need better technical expertise and guidance on how to implement these conservation technologies as part of those agronomic systems, and the understanding and the interactions within those systems and better get a better understanding of that. So within these high productivity areas, they want to make sure they can focus there and really optimize production while they're improving agricultural sustainability. And so with the funding coming in from the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, and they're working, really, the Soil Health Partnership was the first partnership engagement, first organizational engagement that the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative had. And they've committed $4 million over the next 5 years to generate that funding to support the Soil Health Partnership to carry our network forward. And that additional funding, those resources coming to the Soil Health Partnership, have allowed us to extend our timeline and our mission timeline for the Soil Health Partnership. And so we're engaged in strategic planning right now. We're trying to address and understand what our role should be going into the future, because a five-year program looks pretty different than a 10-year program. And it allows us to think maybe a little bit differently about the types of information we could collect, or the geographic influence that we could have, or geographic scope in the network of number of sites we could have. So we're starting to ask ourselves, as we're further engaging with others, forming those partnerships, forming those collaborations, what does it mean? How far do we want to go? How many sites? Is it staying at 100? Is it increasing from 100 sites to 200 sites? Are they still on farm locations? Are there other industry sites that we could bring into the partnership? Are there maybe different tiers for data collection so we can engage with many more farmers than we are today? So we're trying to understand what our role should be, and the engagement with the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative is essential to that. We wouldn't be able to do it without their support. So maybe I'll take a break here, wrap up, and ask if there are maybe any questions or comments on what I've presented today. Across the rotations in the network of, so across the network of sites we have, we do have farmers that are growing sweet corn. Actually, my doctoral work was in potatoes, sweet corn, and snap beans. I very much understand the opportunities that exist in the vegetable world. One of the limitations is utilizing is the harvest data for most of sweet corn production, the georeference yield monitor data, collecting that within the program. So currently, we don't have a lot of sweet corn data coming into the partnership, but it's something that our growers are definitely asking about, and we're trying to understand how to incorporate that into our data collection effort.